$5 Bin Podcast with Mark and Rick.
And now with a splash of Brian.
Hello, Cinemaniacs, and welcome to the $5 Bin Podcast, the podcast where we revisit and review movies from our youth. I'm your host, Mark Dittleman, and with me, my co-host, Rick Maxian.
Hello.
Hello, Richard and Brian Higgins.
Ahoy, hoy.
Hello, gentlemen. How are you doing? Happy holidays to you.
Oh, happy holidays to you.
We are on the precipice of Christmas.
Yes, and we have
standing on the precipice
Hanukkah.
Of Christmas.
We are the in-between of Hanukkah and Christmas. Is there a word for that? I don't think there is.
I think it's the precipice.
Oh.
Hanumus.
Hanumus Christmas. Prime.
Yeah.
The most Jewish of Transformers.
Wasn't that in Family Guy? It's like, oh, I didn't know Optimus Prime was Jewish.
Yeah. That was an older one.
Yes.
That's the one that they didn't air, and then it was on the DVD.
Oh, right. That was like a coveted one that you had to search.
Oh, I didn't know that.
But if you found it, you could give it away as a gift.
Oh.
Like on Christmas.
I mean, we've already been talking about Christmas.
That's
so we don't
true,
really need
yeah.
to transition into
true.
It.
Well, Christmas was part of the movie that we picked. Because
I'm not going to give you anything for Christmas,
is
Mark.
Is the season. Oh, you're such a Scrooge.
Duh.
Scrooge duh. Yes, we are not doing Charles Dickens classic.
Well,
Christmas
this
Carol.
Is Charles Dickens classic.
It's a version. We're doing 1988 Scrooge, which it was a movie I always loved growing up. And one of the things that really blew my mind and made it exciting was that it was such a dark twist to the classic Dickens tale. It was a version of Scrooge that was twisted and funny, but also it was meta. Because they were commenting on the original.
Not commenting. They were actually running the
original.
They were
actually doing the show, a live show.
Yeah.
I mean, this was really in the wheelhouse of like Bill Murray's prime, though, you know?
Yeah.
He was just firing on all cylinders. This movie was directed by Richard Donner. Now, we don't have to get into his creds because obviously we know who Richard Donner is. We've done him on the podcast.
And Blitzen.
That's a weird way to say that.
We've covered him on the podcast in the like of like Lethal Weapon. So we kind of.
Oh yeah, we did that movie.
Was that around Christmas last year?
It might have been.
Was a Christmas theme to that. No, last year is when we shoehorned in Time Cop.
Oh yeah, Time Cop. Time Cop,
oh,
a Christmas movie.
We made it into a Christmas
just
classic.
Like Die Hard is a Christmas movie. We should do that.
Time Cop is more of a Christmas movie.
Well, it's funny.
They had a Christmas party.
You know that on the roast of Bruce Willis, he yelled out and said, Die Hard's not a Christmas movie, but on the IFC channel, they're going to be running a Christmas marathon hosted by Reginald L. Johnson. And in the promo, he goes, sorry, Bruce, Die Hard is definitely a Christmas movie. So I'll take Carl Weathers.
Carl Weathers? Carl Winslow.
Carl Winslow.
I mean,
no, I listen to Carl Weathers, though.
I mean, I guess.
Apollo Creed.
I guess in a fight, Apollo Creed versus Carl Winslow.
That's true.
I'm.
Who's in their corner? One's got Rocky, one's got Urkel. Like, who's the cut man?
Maybe he has Stefan or Kel.
Oh, he is much cooler.
Yeah.
There we go. So I talked about my experience a little bit. Why I love this movie growing up. What about you guys when you first watched Scrooge?
I actually don't remember, like, I don't remember it as a child watching it or anything. I mean, I remember seeing it maybe high school or college age. That was.
So a little later. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it was probably 10 plus years after it was released is probably when I saw it for the first time.
That sounds about the right range. And
I probably first saw it on DVD.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, that's what I'm going to guess. It was probably like a. Or it was on TV or something, and I watched
it. Yeah, because they did play it a lot on TV.
Yeah.
I mean, again, I probably had more opportunity because I had, like, HBO growing up. So
yeah,
I
so they probably,
this,
yeah.
You
yeah.
know, and
they probably had that.
Right, exactly.
So, I mean, I remember it. I was like, whenever I watched it, I always enjoyed it because it was Bill Murray prime.
Again, it was a story where you could take a regular, like, a mixed up version of a classic tale, but then you put Bill Murray in, he was funny. So he's making funny comments on it along
right.
the way, but then you also have really cool supernatural effects, and we'll talk about the effects, how they hold up it up, but at the time, like, the ghosts were scary and funny and well done.
I mean, I was going to say, a lot of these effects, most of them are practical.
Right, exactly.
There's not a lot of digital effects, and, you know, like we've always kind of stated in the podcast, it's anything practical
holds up
like 90% of the time.
Yeah. What about
but
you, Brian?
Some stuff, you know, it doesn't.
Yes.
That's your, okay. And on that note, let's jump.
Thanks, Cinemaniacs.
Jump it right into the movie.
We're all done.
Well, while we do that, I just want to talk about the up top scene where you get it. Cause you get the, now I know this was not made by Tim Burton, but there were a lot of Tim Burton-esque things that I thought in this movie. Like at the top, there was like the music that was like, da 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 da. Well, it was Danny Elfman.
Yeah.
Which you think a lot about, like,
I mean,
Tim
I was
Burton.
Just going to say, it's yeah, Danny Elfman.
Danny Elfman did it. So there was like that da 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 da, like creepy kids singing. And then they did this flyover shot. You know, like that. It
didn't
little,
make
little
you
like
think of Batman?
The opening scene, and I said this to you guys before we started, I really didn't remember.
I like, didn't
the
remember
first
this at
of
all.
Because you get the scene where you basically are in the North Pole at Santa's workshop, and then it turns into like a like an action movie where Lee Majors has to save
the $6 million man.
The $6 million man. He has to save Santa and Mrs. Claus and the elves from terrorists. So it's a little bit like Santa Claus versus the Martians, a little bit. You know?
It's very weird. And it was like, wow, they did this in like 88. Like, this is something I would have expected to see like last year or something like that. It's just like a weird fight scene with Santa and he's trying to protect Christmas from the terrorists. But
I have to imagine the theatrical experience because like you walk into the theater.
Yeah.
You sit down. That starts playing.
Expecting this comedy.
And you're just like, wait, did I go into the wrong theater?
Right. It's kind of like what they did in later years in like Tropic Thunder.
Yeah.
Like we had like these fake trailers.
Yeah, exactly.
On.
Yeah.
So it ends in it, and this is a promo for an upcoming feature on the IBC network. And we kind of hear a little bit about some of their other programming that they feature.
7 o'clock. Psycho sees Santa's workshop. Eat this. And only Lee Majors can stop them. The night the reindeer die. 8:30, and America's best loved singer invites you to share a homestyle holiday. When it's Bob Goulet's old-fashioned Cajun Christmas. IBC presents America's favorite family in a special Christmas episode.
Hi, Mom. Where's Dad? Should have been home by now.
Well, Wally, I know your father is out chasing beaver.
Father loves beaver. Here on IBC, you'll love it.
This was kind of like reminiscent to UHF and like
yes.
Even Gremlins 2.
Yes.
It's like they have all these wacky takeoffs of existing programs that just have like this weird or dark spin to it. Almost like a movie that Stay Tuned.
Yes.
Where it's just like you take like a normal show and turn to Ed McMahon.
Yes.
It's like shows we all recognize, but they're slightly twisted.
But I love when they do this, when they bring in the actual like voiceover actor for every trailer from like 85 to like
Don LaFontaine.
Don LaFontaine.
Yeah. And, like, I loved this. I was like, this is amazing.
Yeah, because to him, it's just more work.
Yeah. Yeah, no,
like,
exactly.
Oh, yeah, I did that, but, you know, just use my voice again. And
now, the one thing this made me think of, we don't seem to get made-for-TV movies like that anymore. I feel like that age is gone. You don't get, like, the maxi series. Like,
no.
The big prestige events that everyone watches together, like.
Oh, no, yeah. Cause there's too many channels.
Yes, but like all of them, the closest you get is like Netflix releases a new Christmas movie,
yes.
Or you get the Hallmark movies.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But you don't get like a big deal on a major network like this anymore, it seems.
Right.
Like my
like
mom
a simulcast.
My mom was super excited because they had I Love Lucy and Dick Van Dyke on CBS the other day.
Yeah, I gotcha.
Like
yeah.
As a Christmas special. Mm-hmm. I was just like, give me some Christmas specials.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And make it a cultural event. Make it so everyone tunes in.
The whole
in.
Family can sit down.
Yeah, and watch Lee Majors.
Maybe if they had a promo, so Frank Cross, played by Bill Murray, he's the big executive
the
here.
Head honcho.
The head honcho at IBC.
Well, but he's not. There's another.
He's not the owner.
It's funny
he's not
because
Robert
like
Mitchum. Robert Mitchum.
He's the president.
Yeah, he's the president.
Yeah, I know.
And
but
Robert
as soon
Mitchum
as that
is,
guy walks into the picture, he's like, "Oh gosh, hello, sir. How are you?"
He's the owner.
I know. It's just
so
funny.
He's like the major stockholder.
Yeah.
You always have to be playing to the shareholders.
You have to couch out of him.
Yeah. Exactly.
So Frank Cross is pushing his company to broadcast an extravagant live production of A Christmas Carol on Christmas Eve, making the staff work throughout the holiday.
Yeah, he's kind of a jerk.
Yeah, he is. And this version, it's a star-studded cast.
Yes.
Kind of.
kind of.
Star-studded adjacent.
Was it even star-studded for then?
No.
Like, Buddy Hackett as Scrooge.
It's names you recognize, but not, like, stars.
Jamie Farr from M.A.S.H.
And Mary Lou Retton.
And Mary Lou Retton.
As Tiny Tim.
And Jonathan Hausman as the narrator.
Do you want to point out with Mary Lou Retton? They show, like, a little clip of each one. The clip they show of Mary Lou Retton is actually part of the movie later on.
Yeah, they just reuse
it. Like, it's like
it.
A backstage clip. It's not apart from the movie.
Right.
Because she does a flip and she lands next to, like, a crew member and says, God bless us, everyone.
Yeah,
because
you know when you do a promo and you're showing the rehearsals.
And you show the backstage footage that hasn't happened yet.
Yeah, exactly.
That was a little odd. So,
but Frank Cross to promote it has his own.
He has his own promo.
Yeah, he's a very more extreme promo to promote this.
Here's the kind of thing I would have done. Grace, cue it up. International terrorism. Freeway killers. Now more than ever. It is important to remember the true meaning of Christmas. Don't miss Charles Dickens' immortal classic, Scrooge. Your flight might just depend on it. Not bad, huh?
This was definitely the first time as a kid I heard the term acid rain.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, what the heck is that?
And that's a term you need context for because it sounds terrifying.
It sounds
if you don't
horrible.
Know what it means.
The intent of the promo is to make this special that they have coming out seem like one of the most important things of your life.
So, obviously, he shows this promo to the rest of the team.
Yes.
And then he fires executive Elliot Loudermilk.
Bobcat Goldthwait.
For disagreeing with him and sends
Sweet
cheap
Chuck.
IBC monogrammed towels to all on his Christmas list, including his personal assistant Grace and his brother James.
Who's Elfrie Woodard, plays Grace.
Yeah, she doesn't play his brother James.
No.
That's played by... Bill Murray's actual brother.
John. Yeah, all three of his brothers are in this movie.
It's a family affair.
It's a family
John.
Affair.
John.
But this goes into that point I was saying where I didn't remember a lot of this beginning because there was a scene, unless this was a different version than mine, but there's a scene where his brother meets him at the beginning and they're like walking down the street. But I was like, I don't remember this scene. I never remember ever seeing this scene before. And he invites him over for Christmas, and he goes, I can't. I'm too busy. And they're, like, walking down. They're watching a guy playing music on the street. And I was like, I don't remember this scene.
They're watching a bunch of musicians.
Yeah.
But did you take a moment to look who those musicians were?
No, I guess
the one that immediately popped up to me was Paul Schaefer.
Oh, really?
I thought that was him.
But wait, let me find, because this is pretty crazy.
Is one of them Yanni?
Oh,
I think it's Miles Davis.
Yeah, it is, because he was in the credit list.
Yeah.
And I was like, where's Miles Davis? I was like, I didn't see him. And so he was one of... Wow.
So it's
yeah,
just
when
like
was Miles Davis?
Legit musicians, and Bill Murray just kind of poo-poos them.
Yeah. You're no good, Miles Davis. You'll never make it anywhere.
Or you, Paul Schaefer.
I do have to mention that we talked about Robert Mitchum. He's the kind of the owner. He's the bigwig.
Preston Rhinelander.
That's who Bill Murray reports to, and... I did appreciate when he came in and he said, we need programming for cats. He's like, animals watch so much TV.
You would appreciate that. Preston Rhinelander sees the stress that Frank's under with the production. So he brings in Bryce Cummings.
Yes.
To provide assistance, though Bryce secretly wants Frank's job.
So this was funny because, again, I obviously remember John Glover.
Yes.
In this movie. But again, like I mentioned before, like with the weird programming,
he
like
looks
Gremlins
so young.
Too. So he's kind of in both of these movies. Oh, and also that scene where he meets his brother. There's like this big wall art near his office and it says Cross, a thing they nail people to, which is like that's his last name. So I guess that's his slogan too.
I guess so.
That was kind of weird. So within this first 18 minutes that were kind of hazy to me, there was a scene as well where it's kind of funny because they really nail home how much of a dick Frank Cross is, but yet he's winning a humanitarian award.
Yes.
And he's giving a speech. So like from the outside, it seems like he's doing all these things.
And then he leaves his humanitarian award in the taxi.
Yeah, he leaves it in the taxi. Which was on purpose, I'm guessing.
Yeah, it seems that way.
And we also learn, and I'm sure they'll get more into the description, but we kind of get the first indication about Grace's son and how he doesn't talk.
All right, so the night before the show, Frank's visited by the ghost of his mentor, Lou Hayward. who died from a heart attack as an unloved miser. Lou warns him three more ghosts will appear to him over the next day to help Frank avoid the same fate.
Let's listen to Lou.
Oh, my God. It's Lou Hayward, your old boss, your best friend. But you're dead. 7 years. Has it been that long? Geez, I mean, to look at you, I wouldn't have guessed more than three tops.
Oh, Frank. Frank, you are in trouble. Big trouble.
All right. Let's just say, for argument's sake, that you're right, that I am in big trouble. What exactly would that mean?
Look at me. Look at your future. Now, if you don't change your ways, you're going to wind up doomed, just as I am. 1 minute. I'm on the 14th hole at Wingfoot, lining up a putt. A heart attack later, I'm a worm feast.
No. You're not a worm feast. You're an hallucination brought on by alcohol, Russian vodka poisoned by Chernobyl. I've been under a lot of pressure lately. I've been putting on a big silence!
So, yeah, like you said, he's got three ghosts coming to him. Now, this is John Forsythe, who is the voice of Charlie from the original Charlie's Angels.
Oh.
I think he was also on, like, Dynasty or Dallas or one of those.
And then Bill Murray went on to be Bosley.
That's true. He was. That's weird. But John Forsythe was they used his voice again in the movie.
Curious.
So they acted again together.
Well, I wouldn't say they were acting together.
No, not together. That's true.
They could have been in the same scene.
I don't think they flew John Forsythe onto the location.
No, I don't think so. So yeah, this is the classic, like, Jacob Marley character.
Yeah.
Yes.
And this is where I start to remember more and more. This was always, like, the point I feel like I picked it up on TV. And he's so gross with, like, the golf ball coming out of his head and he's got birds.
Mouse.
It was very good. Actual thing was just cool.
Yeah.
It was good makeup.
Yeah.
Very good. Like you said, so he threatens him, and there's at one point where he holds Frank, he pushes him, and he kind of, like, goes through the window. He kind of, like, morphs through the window and holds him over the city.
Yeah.
And then he drops him. That wasn't bad, I didn't think.
When he went through the glass was cool, and then he was on the other side of the glass, and that was cool, and then he dropped, and it was like a typical 80s drop. I mean,
but
it wasn't
as bad, because I think they moved the camera, too.
Yeah.
As he fell, and they did a distance. They didn't try to do a tight close-up.
Yeah,
of him
I thought
falling.
It was pretty good.
Yeah, I got
one of the better falls we've
seen.
Yeah,
I thought so, too. Especially for the late 80s, because like mid-90s ones where it looks awful, you know? So.
I've seen some from, like, last year that look
true.
Awful.
So, before the ghost vanishes, he dials up Claire Phillips, Frank's lost love from years ago. Claire comes to the network to talk to Frank, but Frank does not make time for her, and she returns to the homeless shelter where she works.
Karen Allen.
Yeah, so this is where Karen Allen is introduced into the movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so throughout the movie, like we said, so they're putting on the Christmas Carol, and he keeps stopping by to see how it's going on, and there's this running joke that they keep doing, and it goes towards the end where the lady who's the censor lady keeps getting injured. Like, she gets hit by a ladder, and then at one point she faints, so they bring out the on-set nurse, and this is Kathy Kinney.
Yes,
Dee
Mimi.
Dee from the Drew Carey Show.
Mimi.
Dee
Dee.
Dee Dee. Who's Dee Dee?
Who's Dee Dee?
Mimi.
Dee Dee. How are you?
Dee Dee.
The best part is if we keep making fun of the Dee Dee mistake, he has to keep it in the episode.
It's fine.
Dee Dee. And then, so Frank's trying to, like, kind of play off all this stuff he's seen so far, and he goes to a lunch with Robert Mitchum and John Glover, and he starts seeing all these weird things. Now, there's the guy who's the waiter, and I'm like, who is that guy? He looks so familiar. It's Socrates from Bill and Ted's.
Oh, yes. Socrates.
I was like, that guy looks so familiar. But during the scene, like, he's hallucinating, like, there's an eyeball in his water, and, like, a guy that's serving a baked Alaska is catching on fire.
He's baking himself.
Like, he's having these weird
delusions. His name's Alaska.
Yeah.
Yeah, so. he's seeing things.
He's seeing things. He had an eyeball in his eyeball.
Yes. And also, when they were at the studio, when Karen Allen was there, like, the prop guy was trying to figure out how to get antlers on a mouse.
On a mouse, and he was like,
Bill Murray's answer is just, staple him.
Yeah, right.
He's a stapler.
Yeah, because he's a jerk, remember?
And Karen Allen's just like, you don't have a heart.
Yeah. His is smaller than the Grinch's.
Oh.
But it will grow five sizes.
Oh.
So
we don't want to get
back
sued.
back to the restaurant. He's seeing all these things. He's hallucinating in front of his boss, which just makes him look like a crazy
person.
Yeah,
it makes him just look like he's going crazy, yeah.
And then as rehearsals start, Frank is visited by the Ghost of Christmas Past, appearing as a taxi driver.
This is David Johansen,
Buster Poindexter.
Who it took me a long time to figure out that was the same guy.
Yeah.
Because I was like, those guys look so familiar.
But you thought Buster Poindexter was his real name?
Yeah, I thought that was just a guy who was a singer. He sang hot, hot, hot. Never knew it was his character. All right, so let's meet the Ghost of Christmas Past.
Wrong way, jerk. Nice hit back there. Solid hit. Stop. You're going the wrong way.
Relax, Frank. Enjoy the ride.
How do you know my name?
I know absolutely everything, Frank. You see, I'm the Ghost. Come on, Frankie. Oh, my God. This is where I grew up. I thought they tore this place down.
They did.
Guess my dad hasn't put up our Christmas lights yet.
Oh, for Christ's sakes, Frank, it's Christmas Eve.
I get it. You're taking me back in time to show me my mother and father, and I'm supposed to get all goosey and blubbery. Well, forget it, pal. You got the wrong guy.
That's exactly what Attila Hahn said. But when he saw his mother, Niagara Falls.
Yeah, and his Ghost of Christmas Past was always a very memorable character to
me. Yeah.
Because he's like gross. He drives this taxi that can go anywhere it needs to go.
It's like the DeLorean.
And yeah, it is. Totally is.
So he's taking Frank to see his past, how he found solace in television after his mother left his father, and how he had fallen in love with Claire but lost her favor when he prioritized his television career over her.
Well, that's funny. I never picked up the fact that his mother left his father. I didn't know that at all. Did you pick that up?
No.
Because they showed him very cold coming home, like just giving meat for gifts and stuff, but it just seemed like it was
doesn't that seem like that's what Brian Doyle Murray would do? He would just give gifts of 4 pounds of meat.
A gift of meat. But yeah, I never picked that up until you said that description that the mother left
him. I wonder if he does it every year now, like just gives, like just sends Bill Murray like 4 pounds of veal just as like a funny. They should do that.
And also during that clip where we met the ghost, there's another running joke of like Bobcat, just bad things keep happening to him.
Yeah.
Like he's trying to drink.
He can never get a drink.
It keeps, the bottle gets knocked out of his hands or something.
Well, the cab driver steals it.
Yep, the cab driver
so
steals it.
So the first
it.
One,
but there
he
was
gets
something
splashed.
Where he fell over into like a garbage.
That's
section.
The third one.
Okay.
Yeah, so like the first one, he gets splashed with water, which then weakens the bag. And so when he's standing there covered in water, the bottle falls out from under the bag.
Yeah.
And then the next one is, yes, when he gets stolen by the Ghost of Christmas Past.
So the ghost can go through, like the ghost car can go through a milk truck, and the ghost can go through doors. And so it was funny, though, that you mentioned in that description that, you know, I didn't know the reason why, but they even showed as a kid that he was kind of raised by
television,
which I thought was funny because that was a joke about me growing up because of just how I retain pop culture information. But people are always like, Mark was raised by the television. But I did like that kind of scene where he's trying to talk about his childhood. And instead of having a real childhood, he's just referencing TV shows he watched.
Yeah.
And taking that on as his...
Which was awesome.
It was awesome. Yeah, this isn't it.
I was touched by a gift. A 4-year-old kid receives what in today's marketplace is a $40 or $50 piece of milk-fed veal. Frank, you still spent the next 15 years of your life sitting on your ass watching television.
Check the records, Chope. I did some stuff. I was a baseball player. One year, I hit the home run that won the big game.
That was the kid on the courtship of Eddie's father.
There was another time, though, that I was running down a hillside that was covered with flowers, and there was a beautiful girl, like 15, with pigtails, and she was waiting for me, and her parents didn't know she snuck out of the house.
You're so pathetic. That was the little house on the prairie.
Was it the
homecoming episode of Little
House? Yes, it was the homecoming episode of Little House. Let's face it, Frank. Garden slugs got more out of life than you did. Name one.
So he tries to pass off the courtship of Eddie's father and Little House on the Prairie. But as a comedy bit, I thought there should have been a third one.
Yeah.
You know, where's the rule of three there?
Oh, yeah. I didn't. Well, I didn't. I thought it was good.
Lazy writing, bad movie.
Come on, no. Yeah. But it was funny because we do have the movie in the background, and Brian just pointed out the scene where the mother walks out of the room and like tearily looks at her son, and it's like, okay, clearly she's gonna do something.
But here's
make
the thing.
Move.
Here's the thing, though.
Very blatantly is leaving the family.
So, I was always just like, she really loves her kid.
Yeah, well, that's what I always thought. But then, because the other thing too is in the beginning of the movie, you meet his brother, and
yep.
she's pregnant at the time yep. with the brother.
With the brother,
which means she left while then.
Yeah. So 55 was when he was a kid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then they jump to 68, and that's when he first meets Claire. While he's running an errand during this like raucous Christmas party that's going on, where the secretary's photocopying her butt,
bottom photocopying.
Yeah, and then we see Lou, his boss, actually as a young guy. It's funny because they talk about how much like he was bad and mean, and he went to hell, and this is why he became this ghost. But he seems much more personable and likable than Frank becomes. Like at the
yeah.
office party, he's talking to everyone. He's,
oh,
like he's chatting them up.
Yeah,
and
he's drinking.
He seems like a nice guy.
Yeah.
So it's like, what did he do that was.
I mean,
he
must
cheated
have
on his wife and stuff like that. But, you
but
know.
Like, he must have run the office party. Like, he
yeah.
was the one who was
he
like,
authorized
let's
it.
Do it.
You can't even have a Christmas party in Frank Cross's leadership. So, yeah, we meet Claire. They form a relationship. We kind of see them celebrating Christmas together. She calls him Lumpy. Because she hit him in the head with the door the first time they met.
Yeah.
It's all very endearing.
Yeah, it's very endearing. They're kind of maybe living together in an apartment, and she gives him a gift of the Kama Sutra.
Yes.
Whoa. So he's like, done that, want to do that. Knew a buddy that did that. Then we jump ahead to Frank's big break, where in 1971, he plays Frisbee the Dog.
Frisbee the Dog.
Which is like this kid's show, and all he does is come out in a dog costume and, you know, eat out of a bowl, and there's the guy from Total Recall is like the host of it.
Yes.
But this is where he makes a decision because he's got a chance to go out to dinner with his boss, Lou, or he can go out to dinner with his plans that he made with Claire, and he chooses the work over her, and that kind of starts to strain on the relationship, and then you eventually can figure out that it unravels, so...
You could figure that out, yep. But we've missed a few things already in this movie.
We did.
Yes.
His mom leaving.
He just values television over people.
That's true.
So after that jaunt to the past, he goes back to the future.
Oh, different movie.
When back in the present, Frank goes to see Claire, hoping to make amends. However, his attitude quickly sours, and he shows his contempt for a homeless man named Herman and the shelter workers. He returns to the studio.
And I do like every time he comes back from one of these trips with the ghost that he's, like, at some part of the set. You know, he'll, like, end up, he's, like, on the set while they're rehearsing. Herman, by the way, was played by Michael J. Pollard.
Oh.
He was a pretty famous actor. He was in, like, Bonnie and Clyde. And the other two homeless people were Mama Fratelli and Rick looked this up. The other guy is her husband.
Yeah. Ann wow. Ramsey and Logan Ramsey.
Yeah. She usually plays a mama. She's Mama Fratelli. She's Throw Mama from the Train. They also think that Bill Murray is Richard Burton. Like all the homeless people, they're like, Liz? Do some acting.
Yeah, which is actually kind of funny.
It was funny. I did like that scene.
Didn't he say like, oh, you can call me Dick?
Yeah, you can call me Dick, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. He was playing along. They probably get into this next, but since he's acting so crazy, Robert Mitchum, who is how I like to say it, puts John Glover kind of as the co-producer of the show or
yeah.
more in charge of the show because he's going crazy.
So up next, the Ghost of Christmas Present arrives as a clumsy yet volatile fairy. She takes him to Grace's apartment, showing his assistant's struggles to support her large family, including her youngest son, Calvin, who has remained mute since seeing his father murdered.
Oh!
Did you pick up on that detail?
I did, yeah.
Okay.
That was like they're dropping
well,
some
so
knowledge on us there.
I didn't remember that detail. at all.
Yeah, right.
And then I always remembered the kid didn't talk.
Yeah. Multiple viewings.
Right.
Like, definitely not the first
exactly.
time.
Exactly. I always remember the kid didn't talk, and then at the end he talked, and I was like, that's great.
Yeah.
But now I'm like, holy cow, there was a actual, like, main that's reason dark. For this.
Yeah, right.
And so, the fairy was Carol Kane.
Well, yeah, we're going to talk about Carol Kane a little bit, because that was another, you know, after watching that movie the first time, that was the other thing that I always remembered was this relationship he had between him and the Ghost of Christmas Present, how, like, they would, you know, she would hit him, right?
Yeah.
She would just beat the hell out of him, and he would, like, yell at her. It was just kind of funny, this adversarial relationship, because, you know, in the classic Dickens tale, Scrooge is not, like, trying to battle back against the ghost. He's
no.
just going along, but they kind of really have this, like, brother-sister relationship. So let's listen to Carol Kane.
And Dee Dee.
The mom, come on out and play with me. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Oh, I'm a little ugly. 7, 8. Oh, I'm so relieved it's been so long. Looks like I'm the Ghost of Christmas Present.
I had a funny feeling. Why did you do that?
Sometimes you have to slap them in the face just to get their attention.
Fine. Slap me in the face. But you kicked me in the wall.
It's time to begin the journey. Now, close your eyes. And think.
No. You close your eyes.
Oh, no.
I'm through.
Don't close them. Close your eyes. And think of snowflakes and moonbeams and whiskers on kitten. No picking. Of rainbows. Forget-me-nots of misty meadows and sun-dappled pools. Oh, look, there's Mr. Hedgehog. I wonder where he's going. Perhaps to sometimes the truth is painful, Frank, but it's made your cheeks all rosy and your eyes bright as stars.
If you touch me again, I'm going to rip your goddamn wings off. Okay?
Oh, you know I like the rough stuff, don't you think?
So she was just so great because she is just a character as is. So she's playing this really wacky.
I want to actually, like, meet her in real life, because I have a feeling she's, like, not like this at all.
No, I think she is, though.
You
it's
think she's crazy?
She's on, like, if you catch
you think
on
she
Netflix,
likes the rough
like,
stuff?
Catch Kimmy Schmidt. She's just, she's playing another, just like,
I have
a,
not
like
seen
another
that.
Wacky character. I feel like she's gotta be like that in real life, because she always plays, like, almost like the same character where she's just like a weirdo.
Some people are good at playing a certain type
That's
of character.
That's true.
Though.
That is true.
That's but. True.
So next, the ghost shows him James.
Yes.
Who still respects Frank as his brother, despite declining invitations to his Christmas celebrations and cheap gifts.
Right. So he's
and
having
the
this
same
party.
Gifts.
Yes. Yeah.
Same gifts.
Same
like,
gifts.
Every year.
They're watching him, and he's, so his, like, wife or fiance is the actress Wendy Malick, who is in, like, Just Shoot Me and stuff
who
like
plays
that.
Wendy Cross.
Plays Wendy Cross. And then,
that means that the character was named something else, but she kept forgetting to react, so they just changed the character's name to Wendy.
They just kept it her
That's always
name.
My theory. Yeah. I think that's also why Tony Danza's
it's
character
always
is always Tony. Tony, because they give him another name.
It's
and he
Tona?
Doesn't.
It's like Mona, but...
No, like Angels in the Outfield, they were like, Mel, Tony. Hey, hey.
They do like, hello, Mr. Thompson.
Yeah.
I think he's talking to you.
So some of the other people at this party, one of the other guests is Bill's brother, Joel Murray.
Yes.
So he's got two of his brothers in this scene here, and that completes the quattro.
The quattro? The quattro. The Murray quattro.
The Murray quattro.
And I always love this part.
Is that like a barbershop quartet?
Oh, I'd watch that.
I don't think I'd watch it if they all sang.
They actually had a TV show, short-lived TV show on Comedy Central where the four of them played golf together. It was
that actually sounds awesome.
Yeah, it was just the four of them walking around, and it was called, like, Open Cup with the Murray Brothers or something like that.
Were they drinking and playing golf?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Bill Murray's done so much, right, that he can just be like, hey, you know what? I want to pitch this. I want you guys to pay me to go play golf.
With my brothers.
With my brothers.
Yeah.
And they're like, done.
Yeah, and that's what they did. That's what Comedy Central
Yeah, they're like, will you be involved? Yes. Yeah. Okay, then
okay,
fine.
Then we're done, yeah. But obviously, I like the part during this and the follow-up that happens at the end where they're playing Trivial Pursuit and they can't get the name of the boat on Gilligan's Island. And he's just like, he starts playing along even though he's a ghost and no one can hear him. He's like, come on, guys. Everyone knows this.
Yeah.
And they're like,
I also like that none of them turn the card over to look at the answer.
Yeah, right. Even the person that read it, who was the question person.
I don't think they realize that the answers are on the other side.
And we also learned that, as established in the first scene, that he gave his brother a towel, but at some point, Grace, his secretary, mixed it up and gave him a top-of-the-line VCR.
Because she's a good person.
She's a very good person.
The hot item at the time was that VCR.
Yes.
It could have been a Sega Master System.
Oh.
Oh.
The ghost leaves him in a utility space under a sidewalk with Herman, now frozen to death.
So you know how bad this utility space was? That was under a sewer. It was so bad that...
How bad was it?
Exactly. Thanks for the setup. It was set up that Frank said this.
That bitch hit me with a toaster. Oh, I love a girl in spirit.
Right. Well, this is nice. Where are we, Trump Tower? Whew, seen a little bit of the city.
Hey! Hey, down here! Hey, down here! Hey, go!
He thought it was Trump Tower. There was the joke.
Topical.
Timely, yeah.
So Frank's trying to escape.
He's frozen.
And then he breaks through a boarded up door to end up back on the set of the production.
Yeah, again, he keeps just like, you know, people are in the middle of the scenes and he keeps like, and this is still the rehearsal, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
And at this point, Preston directs Bryce to take over rehearsals to give Frank some time off.
It's like the final straw because he's no longer in charge of this production anymore. You obviously know, if anyone who is aware of A Christmas Carol, is the three ghosts, and the one that's the ghost of Christmas future, you know, usually looks like a Grim Reaper type of character. Yep. So I think even as a kid, I thought too, when the elevator opened, you saw this hooded robe figure with like a skeleton head and you were like, oh God, there's the third ghost. And so does Frank and he flips out.
Right.
But it's the one for the show.
Yep.
So that's where the confusion starts to come to play. But, by the way, I wanted to mention this earlier. Frank's drink of choice is like
Tab.
Stoli with Tab.
Yeah.
He keeps doing Stoli.
Sugar free Tab.
It sounds awful. Tab by itself is not good. But.
Yes.
Another note I wrote, which going back to the boardroom, is why was there such a thing in the 80s where if you worked at a TV studio, you had to have a wall of like 50 TVs? Why was that a thing? Like you had to watch every TV at once being like, here's everything that's on.
In the control room, I think it's...
The control room, yes, but like in his office. You know, at the beginning, he had the TVs that they were all playing the same thing, like the promo, but they were across 50 TVs.
Those silly, silly people.
I get during the production where you need to cut to different shots. Yeah. But the executives would always have like a wall of TVs.
But it was like one image.
Yeah.
Spread across all the TVs,
exactly.
Or just one, like each TV had the same
image.
There
would usually be one image spread across 50
TVs. That's because they didn't have big screens.
They didn't have big screens.
So Frank retires to his office and he finds Elliot waiting for him with a shotgun.
Yes.
Ready to kill Frank for the loss of his job and family.
Well, right before that, He was watching his, and that's why I brought up the giant wall of TVs. He was watching something. He turned around. The face of the ghost of Christmas Future actually appeared, and this giant practical hand is about to grab him until Bobcat shows up.
Yeah.
And kind of scares him away.
Oh, that Bobcat.
Sweet Chuck.
So he's trying to take his revenge, and it's kind of funny how, you know, you get the Bobcat voice, and then you get this, like, little speech that he keeps going. And I always like his little lines during this.
Honey, I'm home!
public. Remember me, boss? The guy who canned the day before Christmas? Merry Christmas! Hello, rabbit.
Would you give me a running start?
Sure. 1,001, 1,002, 1,003. My God! My babies!
Back to me on this after the holidays. I've had a bad day.
You had a bad day. Let me tell you a little bit about my day. I got fired. My wife left me. She took a little baby daughter with her. I can't recall much after that because ever since then I've been crying, stinking.
Took a little baby daughter.
It's
his delivery is just so interesting.
It's crazy.
And the funny thing is, he does not talk like that. But yet, all through the 80s when he was Bobcat, that's his voice style, you know?
Yeah.
That's not really how his voice really sounds like, though, but.
It's not that far from his real
voice.
It's
not far, but it was more exaggerated. It was like how, like, now we have Paul Rubens Pee-wee back again, and he kind of does like a subdued Pee-wee, where back in the day it was like an over energetic.
Yeah.
You know, high-pitched Pee-wee. It's like a toned-down version.
Like Tone Loc.
Oh, hey, funky Gold Medina. Ace Ventura.
What's he doing lately?
Why, talking out of your ass, Ace Ventura. So, yeah, he does manage to escape Loudermilk into the elevator, but then we get the real Ghost of Future Present.
Yes.
He thinks it's the one from the show.
No, but this Ghost of Christmas Future, takes him to the future where Calvin... The little boy.
Yes.
Has become catatonic and been institutionalized. And Claire has heeded Frank's words and shunned the homeless to become just like Frank.
Yeah, because she's like sitting at this restaurant and it's all white background and she's got this makeup on, powder.
That's crazy. Like,
and then the homeless children are just like standing there at the restaurant. And she's like, get security.
I was like,
you know,
how did she make that much money helping out?
Once Frank, you know, was gone, then clearly she would turn a new leaf and be like, he was right the whole time.
Of course.
Yeah. What was the inciting incident to her to just do a complete 180? I don't know.
And speaking of Frank being gone.
He's gone.
Finally, the ghost shows Frank's cremation ceremony with only James and his wife in attendance.
Yeah.
Frank, having come to a revelation about his life, is shocked when he finds himself in the coffin as it is about to be incinerated, and breaks his way out, ending up back out of the elevator facing Elliot. Frank's completely changed demeanor surprises Elliot, particularly when Frank offers him a high-level executive position.
Yeah, so now he's going to kind of take back the show and get Elliot's help. So he's on board, he's turned over a new leaf, just like Ebenezer Scrooge. He's got a new outlook on life. He's wicked happy and excited about Christmas. And one of the things I loved is that last scene where Buddy Hackett goes, "You boy, what day is today? Christmas Day, sir. Give me a goose." And he flips him the coin, and then Frank catches the coin.
Like, yeah.
So he walks out, and he kind of commandeers the performance towards the end.
And then continues on.
I guess at this point
on.
The show's going on live?
It's live, yeah. It's a live show at this point.
So... With Elliot's help, Frank returns to the production set, secures Bryce in the control room, and breaks the show's live broadcast to speak of his new appreciation for life.
Yes.
He apologizes on air to Grace, James, and the cast and crew, and makes a passionate plea to Claire to come back to him.
Yeah, so this was, and now I have some of this, but it's really long, I'll probably cut it down, but this is like Bill Murray's big speech here at the end, and he's allowed to do this because, like we said, Elliot Bobcat Goldthwait is... He's got his shotgun and he's in the control room. So he's dictating to them as to, you know, keep it on Frank as he gives this speech.
What are you doing watching television on Christmas Eve?
They're paying your salary, you ass!
And what kind of a rat bastard idiot would schedule a live show on a Christmas Eve?
Only you, Frank.
You know, a week ago, I'd have kicked your butt right out of the building. But you know something? He's absolutely right. You are looking at a guy who told someone today to staple antlers to a mouse's head to further my career. How many of you people have got the brass cojones to try something like that.
Look, I got a great brother. Look at this guy here. My brother James. Look how cute he was back then.
Oh, that's right.
And look at me with the ears, the taxi driving down the street with the doors open. And got my hair growing, huh?
Not yet.
I got this for Christmas today from him. I give him a towel. The VCR is from Grace, James. You're right about everything, okay? Except the SS Minnow, James. What was the ship that brought them all to Gilligan's Island? The SS Minnow. No points this round, James.
Wait a minute.
Hello, Wendy. You know, it's not too late on Christmas Eve to have fun. You can call people that you haven't seen. You can call a college roommate. You can call, you know, an old army buddy.
Keep
you
that tape rolling.
This your personal history. Banker.
That happened because it's Christmas Eve, I'm telling you.
I'm not crazy. It's Christmas Eve. It's the one night of the year when we all act a little nicer. We smile a little easier. We cheer a little more. For a couple of hours out of the whole year, we are the people that we always hoped we would be. It's a miracle. It's really a sort of a miracle because it happens every Christmas Eve. And if you waste that miracle, you're going to burn for it. I know what I'm talking about. You have to do something. You have to take a chance. You do have to get involved. There are people that are having trouble making their miracle happen. There are people that don't have enough to eat. There are people that are cold. You can go out and say hello to these people. You can take an old blanket out of the closet and say, here, you can make them a sandwich and say, oh, by the way, here. I get it now. And if you give, then it can happen. Then the miracle can happen to you. It's not just the poor and the hungry. It's everybody who's got to have this miracle. And it can happen tonight for all of you. If you believe in this spirit thing, the miracle will happen, and then you'll want it to happen again tomorrow. You won't be one of these bastards who says Christmas is once a year and it's a fraud. It's not. It can happen every day. You've just got to want that feeling. And if you like it and you want it, you'll get greedy for it. You'll want it every day of your life, and it can happen to you. I believe in it now. I believe it's going to happen to me now. I'm ready for it. It's a good feeling. It's really better than I felt in a long time.
The big long speech. But really, I mean, that was like his chance to really go for it, I think.
Yeah.
So.
I think it was perfect.
It was great.
It was a great speech, a good ending to everything.
They're basically like at the end of the movie, they're just like, Bill Murray, just go.
But like, and I like the part where all the people that were at the party were like, how did he know that?
Yeah, exactly. They're like,
we
what?
Just played that game.
I feel like they should at least be like, does he have our apartment bugged?
Yeah. Was that VCR?
And show them turn over the card. Oh.
We should have looked at the back. That's where the answer
That's what should have happened.
I guess we'll never know what the answer is.
So he's giving this impassioned speech, and Claire sees it at the shelter and makes for the network with the help of the Ghost of Christmas Past.
Yeah, because he goes, what floor you want? Because that the taxi can go to any floor. It's a magic taxi.
And as Frank and Claire reunite, Calvin comes up to Frank and speaks for the first time.
And he says,
have a Merry Christmas, everybody. Did I forget something, big man?
God blesses everyone.
Thanks again.
God bless us, everyone. And then Frank leads the crew in singing Put a Little Love in Your Heart and sees Lou, the three ghosts, and the ghost of Herman smile and wave back to him.
And all the little, we forgot to mention, so the Ghost of Christmas Future has like these trapped souls inside its robe, and then they're all singing at the end.
It's very awkward.
It's very awkward.
It's actually very cool.
Yeah. Well, it's funny how he like nods to each of them, like recognizing them, and then he gets to them and he's like, ugh.
Well, you would too.
I would too, yeah.
And
true.
Again, I mentioned the theatrical experience at the beginning. Like you walk in, you think you're seeing a different movie.
Right.
Then it's just him telling the theater audience to sing along.
He's like, this side sing, now this side sing. So it's like,
you can do better.
Right. Yeah. So like, okay, well, that was a sequence designed for the theater, but oh well.
Well, yeah, it's like Ferris Bueller's post credit.
Right. There we go. So Frank Cross has been redeemed, and Christmas is saved.
End of the movie. Charles Dickens classic.
Oh, you had a the there.
I did.
End of the movie. Is that going to be something new for 2019?
It could be.
End of the movie.
End of the movie. So, gents, what do you think about watching Scrooged with the D after all this time?
No, I think it was still, it's still a good movie.
Yeah. It's one that, it's
in, not something I'd watch every year, though.
It's in my rotation. I don't know if I watch it every year. Yeah. It's not on the Jingle All the Way level, but I'll watch it every couple years.
It's one of those ones where I, going into it, being like, we need to revisit this. I knew it was good. I knew I loved it, but it had been a few years since I'd seen it.
So yeah.
My real question, does the entire thing hold up versus just the famous parts in my mind that I knew, like, you know, those specific scenes?
I think
scenes.
The whole movie holds
so
up.
I think so, too. Yeah. But that's the thing I wanted to confirm. Because
people still understand TV executives scenes. And all
the
that stuff.
That,
it's not.
That's the most jarring
yeah.
is seeing the years.
Yeah.
Yes, it's 80s and the style is 80s, but it doesn't feel like an 80s movie.
There's just certain
so when all of a sudden it's there's a Christmas party with a fully grown Bill Murray in 1968, that seems so long ago.
I know, yeah, it does. Yeah. And the only things that really dated are like, so like he gives a VCR.
Yeah.
Or like the play on the classic television we get, Leave It to Beaver, where if this movie was made today, they'd be like doing a takeoff of like an 80s show.
Yes.
Because like today, some of these shows that are like weird takeoffs, you'd be like, yeah, I could see that on Netflix. They'd probably make that.
It is true.
Be making this weird variation of a TV show.
Well, I'm sure we're going to get a Netflix, like, Scrooged at some point, remade with
probably Adam Sandler because he has his Netflix deal.
That's
true.
He just has all
Adam Sandler. Actually, I could see Adam Sandler doing this.
He'd be like,
I'm not going to.
Christmas, shop-a-dop-a-doo. Oh, wait, I'm Jewish.
That's pretty much why it would be an amazing Scrooge thing. He'd be like, get away. I don't know what you guys are doing.
Yeah, there you go.
I think this is a good movie. I think every couple of years, it's something you can revisit. It's not something I think I'd watch all the time.
And I don't think they really, but I think it's cool because, yeah, they do, you know, modern takes and we get newer classics of Christmas films, but I don't think anyone has really done something similar like this. A Christmas movie come out where it's a weirder tone to it. Like when Santa Claus came out, they're like, here's a new Christmas movie, but it's still like a fun family film.
Like Elf?
It's still a fun family film.
Yeah.
What about Daddy's Home 2? A Bad Mom's Christmas.
Yes. Well, okay. I guess that could be a little raunchier, but I'm saying like a dark and twisted
The Night
Christmas.
Before?
The Night Before Christmas.
Well, no, The Night Before.
Oh, The Night Before, right. With Seth Rogen.
Yeah.
Why did you sound like that?
With Seth Rogen. None of us have a good Seth Rogen.
No, that's true. That's true. Yeah.
That was like Fat Albert.
We've got Fat Albert.
Christmas is on its way. And on that note, thanks, Cinemaniacs, for listening to this episode of the $5 Bin Podcast. I'm Mark, and for Rick and Brian, happy holidays! You can always paint the tree green. Good night!
Goodbye!
Frank Cross, it's your old boss, Lou, again.
Lou?
I'm back.
I thought you died again.
I've been dead the entire time, but after your big impassioned speech last year, you went back to your wicked ways once again.
I needed money.
Greedy. Yes, you became greedy. So, therefore, I have invited three more ghosts to visit you this year.
No!
To evaluate your wicked ways, but they're not the normal past, present, future ones, because you've met them. They are new ghosts. Oh, the first one has appeared now. First up, in for the ghost of Christmas past. The ghost of the six-month-old cop with a badge.
Oh, I'm a dead baby.
Oh, God. Oh. See, Frank, look what you've made me do.
I'm not, that's fine.
In the line of duty. He was
shot down in the line of duty because he's a child.
The line of duty.
He's got duty in his diaper, yes.
Well, so I have to change him?
We're going
to
move away from him. All right. Bye, baby. So what have you learned from that, Frank?
Nothing. I have to change a diaper.
Okay, fine. Then,
is my girlfriend pregnant?
Obviously,
is that what you're trying
learning
to tell me?
The correct lessons, Frank, so I have to call upon the next ghost. In for the ghost of Christmas present, we have the ghost of underwear snitching.
Yes, I can tell you're wearing the tighty whities, Frank. That's not going to help you when you try to have babies.
Oh my God. He seems scary.
He knows all. He's very scary. He lives in
What's
the
he
moment.
Trying to teach me?
Well, that's for you to decide, not for me.
But you haven't shown me anything. You just showed me the ghost.
Well, you're supposed to interpret. I just lead the way.
Oh, okay.
Frank, you're not getting the lessons. Therefore,
yes,
we have to bring you to the ghost of Christmas future, the most scariest ghost of all, the ghost of Jessica Tandy from Batteries Not Included.
Bobby, what are you doing here? Bobby.
That's right, Frank. You will become Bobby. You will encounter a woman who thinks you were her long-lost dead
son,
Bobby.
Are you my
son,
Bobby Cat?
Yes. Mom.
Bobby Cat Goldthwait.
Hey, Mom. No, that's me, Bobby Cat Goldthwait. You took my little daughter with her.
I thought I was your mom. I'm Bobcat.
It's Bobcat. That's right, Frank. This is your future. Me and my mom, Bobcat, are gonna come home and live at your place.
Maybe my mom will come too.
It's pretty big.
And me, Mrs. Chip.
I made a lot of money in the last year being Scrooge again.
So you're okay with this arrangement?
Yeah, I don't mind it.
Oh boy!
Coming next Christmas, a new Full House scenario.
Have mercy.
Have mercy
to
all
everyone.
Of us.
Thanks, Cinemaniacs, for listening to this episode of the $5 Bin Podcast and our full movie reviews it of Scrooged to celebrate the season. You can find us on the social interwebs. Tweet us at the number $5BinPOD, like us on Facebook, or email us at thefivedollarbin.podcast@gmail.com. Download and subscribe to all our episodes on iTunes, and when you do, hey, why not leave a nice rating and review? Helps others to find the podcast as well. Why, thank ya! For information about Brian and my improv organization, Natick Improv, and upcoming workshops and performances, like our holiday show, you can visit natickimprov.com or like Natick Improv on Facebook. Well, that's it for this episode, Cinemaniacs. Until next time, hasta la vista, baby Christmas ghost. Boo.